Welcome to the TAC meeting, and this is very well, this is my first full formal meeting as your chair, and very possibly my last.
You're good at that.
Yeah, yeah. The, in my city, the election is totally undecided, and doesn't look like it'll be decided for a long time. Do you have a close one, too?
No.
Somebody else has got a close one.
Kito City.
Oh, that's a county, he's got two of them, man. That's right.
They're both neck and neck?
They're both too close to call still.
Too close to call.
Trending in different directions, but yeah.
Well, ours isn't trending anywhere. Ours goes from 18 up one way to 8 up the other way. It just goes back and forth. So if Mike Wilson were not to succeed, then one of you would probably be deposing me in this role. So I'm going to milk this for all it's worth. Well, welcome. We appear to have a quorum now, so we're going to get going. Roll call. Who does roll call? Thank you.
Life, Cathedral City, Coachella.
Here.
Desert Hot Springs.
Here.
Indian Wells.
Here.
Indio.
Here.
La Quinta.
Here.
Palm Desert.
Here.
Palm Springs. He's here, not in the room. Rancho Mirage. Riverside County.
Here.
Cavalcante. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Okay, first thing we will do is ask for any public comments. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to address us? Seeing none, we'll move on to TAC member comments. Anyone have anything for the good of the order? And Wade, I'm going to call on you to talk about your weekend and what you did this weekend.
Okay. I worked with the city of Malibu. I was one of several managers that they asked for staffing Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So Reva was a CCMF board member last year. She's the vice president of the department. And so they called CCMF. So many of us from CCMF took turns. So Saturday morning, my shift changed several times during the night. So I was supposed to be there 6 to 4. And about 10 o'clock at night, I got an email that they moved my arrival to 8 in the morning. About 4 people on my team didn't get that message, so they weren't very happy with the director when I arrived. They were there at before 6, and I didn't get there till about 7. By yesterday, there was 330 structures burned. They were starting to repopulate portions of the town. The fire was, by the end of the shift on Saturday, was 82% contained, and they were beginning to work on the next phase, which would be what happens if it rains, and what are we doing about debris fields. Interestingly, I thought for Indian Wells and for many of us, it's a unified command, so the fire is much bigger than Malibu, and the county is calling a lot of the shots. So you have these individual EOCs for cities. Malibu City Hall is out of commission, so their EOC was in the Santa Monica City Hall. And the connection to the county calling the shots and how much communication goes on is pretty frustrating for the individual cities. And I think it'll be, you know, similar. We really need to figure out how that unified command is going to work here in the valley and how we get information to and from, and we're in the have a presence in the county EOC. There, you know, this was several days. The fire had started prior Thursday, so this is more than a week after the fire. So they were trying to begin winding down the emergency into recovery. And so the county EOC is still up and going, but they were trying to lower it to essential personnel. And so I didn't have a representative in Malibu didn't have a representative in the county EOC. So it made communications even just that much more difficult. So the one of the big things for them as they were repopulating, they still don't have power in all areas and gas. The water is clean, but you know, we were putting porta potties out in neighborhoods and things because a lot of the areas on septic. And Malibu is just one real long skinny strip, 21 miles long and barely wide. And so the, you know, amount of damage all the way around the high school was torched, and there's lots of burn. They did a community meeting Thursday. The fire started Friday. It really hit Malibu. Tuesday they did a community meeting at night talking about evacuations, the fire, what they were doing. Pretty raucous meeting, as you can imagine, but I think it was, you know, Riva did a really good job with that meeting, and it was, I think, a real smart move that they did the meeting. Arvala was in the back of the room videoing and, you know, giving us a blow-by-blow on the text to Striplin and Polskamp and I. But they took all of those questions that came out, they tried to answer as many as they could on site, and then they took all of those questions, and each of the questions that come in, they're still running the City Hall phone 24 hours. They're staffing it 24 hours. So any new question, they continue to add to the website. So they're building this thing where they're answering every question, and they were really doing, I thought, a good job of putting that effort into making sure that they were getting information out and connecting. We were, you know, trying to get portable cell towers back in place, because cell service isn't all that good in Malibu anyway. And now with a whole bunch of facilities burned out, it's even worse. And so we're putting in temporary cell stores where you could buy new service and a new cell phone and towers. And so I spent a lot of time, I went back to City Hall this morning and said, okay, we got to re-up our resource guide. Because a whole bunch of their numbers were no good when I was trying to get all the cell companies. And so you want to check your, make sure your numbers are current. It was interesting. I think, you know, lessons learned, and those guys are doing a great job. I think because you get in the groove of doing it, they had an action plan, they were doing their assigned duties, and it was hard for them to look up and think, wow, we might have a rainstorm after this, which will be, you know, you'll have just let people into a damaged neighborhood to get them wiped out by a flood. And I was surprised, just, you know, you get in the sense, you know, many of those people had been in the EOC already like 4 or 5 days, and so they didn't actually have the after action report from Santa Barbara City or County yet. And I was thinking, you know, those things, what happened in Montecito would be, that's the kind of the work plan, you know, template you'd think for Malibu. So, because we're all connected city managers, I was able to get all of that stuff into the EOC so they could start, you know, I'm figuring that we could just steal Santa Barbara's template, put City Malibu on it, you know, and get some more stuff out there. So they're working on that still today.
Well, I'm impressed that you put all that time into it, and I would hope that to the extent that they need more help, just not only there but other places in the state, that the word will get out. I think it's tremendous experience for our folks to be involved in these, not just at the city manager level, but building inspectors and civil engineers and everybody else. So hopefully that word will get out as they're going forward. They're probably going to need some help for a while.
There's still a call out for the campfire. I don't know if you got it through the league, but there's an EOC request for assistance there. And same thing, I'm trying to plug some of my staff into the Malibu situation, because I think it, even if they're just standing there watching, it's a really good opportunity.
Yeah.
So I'd be glad to share the emails as they come.
Yeah, maybe we can. I think that's worth doing. Okay, anybody else have a report even comparable to that one? Anything to raise? Nothing? Okay. All right. And,
was everything else on the back?
Yeah, you know, I love that photograph. I've known you for a long time, but I never knew that way in the beginning. That was a while ago, huh?
It was a while ago. 86.
Well, anybody who's going to retire deserves to be embarrassed a little bit. So. Executive Director comments.
After that report, I'm not going to try to compare. That's just. Congratulations, Wade. Thank you.
Okay, consent calendar. Anybody want to remove anything or discuss anything on consent? Nope. I'll accept a motion.
So motion.
Second.
Indian Wells and
me.
My neighboring city. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Consent calendar is approved.
And, you know, Mark, just thinking of Wade's report, I wonder if there is any value, George, in having your EOC director here and maybe providing a little update on city-county coordination.
That's a great idea. As Wade was talking, I was thinking about our recent experience with our two fires that we had, the Holy Fire and the Cranston Fire. And our experience on the Holy Fire, you know, that fire started in Orange County. And so they were really manning the EOC and incident command, and then the fire burned over into Riverside County, and so we were having to still go through them. And so it's really interesting dynamics of how that worked and some lessons that we can all learn from that whole effort. So yeah, I'd be happy to have that as a future topic. Good idea.
Yeah, or maybe where we could bring other staff.
Oh, yeah. We could actually even go to the EOC here in Indio.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
It's been recently updated. It's a fantastic facility.
It just reminds you, you know, you get in these daily routines. I think I'm solving council fires, you know, and then you go and do that, and you think, oh, yeah, boy, you do have some responsibility here. I'm going to get that together.
We'll work with you on scheduling something.
Great. And I want credit that happened during my chairmanship. Okay, discussion items. I believe Mr. Jones is here from the county on the impacts of SB 946. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. My name is Keith Jones, Deputy Director with Riverside County Environmental Health. I want to thank Tom and Joanna for giving me a few minutes to be on the agenda today. Late September, Governor Brown signed two bills, and early October, our Board of Supervisors directed our department, Environmental Health, to study these two bills, do some outreach, and come back in 60 days and give an impact report to our board. So we'll be returning to our board on December 4th to give that report. So all of you are getting a little sneak preview of what we're going to talk about, and it's important for us to reach out to our city partners because we're all in this together. We want to work together on these issues. I think the last time I addressed this body was when the state passed the cottage food legislation and when the county revised our ordinance on food trucks. So we always like to give you a heads up. I would expect that you all had a heads up for your city attorneys already on these two matters, but as we get closer to January 1st, hopefully we'll all be in tune and not surprised. So with that, let me go ahead and proceed with a short presentation, if I may. Okay, like I said, early October, the board gave us the directive, so we've prepared this presentation, and if the board wants to see something similar to this on the 4th, we'll be there to present it, as well as provide an impact report. So the two bills that we're going to talk about are SB 946 and AB 626. They're very different, but there is a common theme between the two. They both involve food safety, and that's why our department was tasked with this review and report. So for Senate Bill 946, it pertains to sidewalk vendors, and sidewalk is also interpreted as a pedestrian pathway. So any area where pedestrians have a right to use that pathway is what we're talking about. We're not talking about motorized food trucks. That's something different. So this is a change to the California Government Code. Sacramento has spoken, so this change will take place January 1st. It applies to both the unincorporated and the incorporated cities. And it relates to both stationary and roaming food vendors, food sales, and merchandise sales. So this is an example of some of the food vending that our department permits. There is a provision in the new government code that says this California Health and Safety Code that pertains to our department is still in effect. So one of our jobs is to get the message out that come January 1st, it's not a free-for-all for food vending. That's kind of a misconception. There still are rules in place, and they're basically the same rules that have always been in place. I can show you that basically the push cart on the left and the hot dog cart in the middle are two of the types of mobile carts that we permit, that we inspect according to the state health and safety code, and that will continue. The orange decals are what we will be issuing starting January 1st for 2019, so that's how your, say, code enforcement staff can recognize what's been permitted by our department. The method on the right is basically just a grill, and that's nothing that we can permit under the state code. There's no way for us to allow that. So if you see something like that, it's not permitted. One of our tasks was to reach out to a lot of the county departments, so I'm going to have a meeting with EDA next, actually this Wednesday morning, and talk about how we can partner with them to get the word out and help people that want to start up either a home kitchen or a sidewalk vending permit activity. So not to alarm anybody, but here's just a couple scenarios. For you, as far as cities, this new code doesn't require you to have a licensing program in place for merchandise vending or food vending, but if you so choose, it has to be based on health and safety provisions. It cannot be based on, say, competition. In other words, you can't prohibit a hot dog cart from setting up on a sidewalk in front of our wiener schnitzel. That's not a health and safety issue. So you may, if you haven't already, want to look at any municipal codes that you have related to sidewalk vending. There's some provisions in this code about enforcement, and there's a provision specifically about parks. I know some of the cities have municipal codes that may prohibit vending in parks. This code does not allow you to do that. Once again, consult with your city attorneys, but you have to be able to allow vending in your parks as long as it doesn't interfere with the users of those parks. They still have a right to enjoy that park, but vendors also have a right to make a business. We have been talking with our city code, our county code enforcement about ordinance 853. I imagine that the board is going to want us to amend that ordinance to address this new code. And there is a potential that county sheriff and city police departments could get tasked if people come across issues like the top photo where it gets a little bit too crazy, and especially like on a street sidewalk, if the vendors happen to take over a corner or an area of a sidewalk, and say you have people having to walk out into the street, there could be that perception it's a public safety hazard. So your local law enforcement could be getting some calls on that regard. And then I mentioned parks already, so we've spoken with our county parks department, and this will relate to your city parks as well. Just another slide here for the city's role. Once again, I kind of jumped the gun a little bit, but yeah, your municipal code, if you have one, needs to be based on health, safety, and welfare. And once again, we're here. We're happy to work with your staff to recognize what can be allowed as far as food vending goes. We want to work together on that issue. These are a couple brochures that I passed out that our department has developed. Feel free to make copies, to post them. We have these on our website, and we have them available. The brochure on the left is instructions on how to contact us and get permitted. And then the brochure on the right, I'll just say a few words about that. The state code still requires a commissary for vending. So mobile food vendors have to operate out of a location that we're inspecting. They can't operate out of their garage legally. They can't operate out of their home legally. They have to have a commissary. And unfortunately, the commissaries in the county are limited. That's why it's taken a few years for us to kind of ramp up our food truck operations here in the county. We're up to about 50 food trucks permitted across the county now, but it's taken some time because we don't have a lot of commissaries. So what we've done to be creative is the brochure on the right is letting people know there's a possibility they can reach out to certain food facilities, restaurants, caterers, and possibly operate out of those locations and get their permits. The second topic is AB 626, and that is referred to as micro-enterprise home kitchens. That is different than cottage food operations. A lot of people get those confused. The cottage food legislation has been in play for 5 or 6 years now. Our department permits around 200 of those operations now. And what's the main difference is those kitchen operations are limited to really low risk foods. You're talking about baked goods, things that don't require refrigeration. So we refer to those as low risk because they don't typically grow bacteria and get people sick. One important aspect of AB 626, and this seemed to be the biggest item that caught the attention when I gave this presentation to WRCOG Planning Directors Group last week, is that there's an opt-in provision for the county. So when we go back to our board on December 4th and do our report, one of the items, the action items that the board may wish to proceed is to direct our department to start working on a local ordinance to permit these micro-enterprise home kitchens. If the board decides to hold off or not to do it, then they will not be allowed in the county. If the board decides to proceed, they ask us to develop an ordinance. We will keep all of you informed on how that is going, how the ordinance is developing. But because we enforce the California Health and Safety Code regarding food safety, we are the local enforcement agency for these types of things. With the cottage food operations, when someone comes to our counter to get a permit from us, the first thing we do is ask them to see their city approval. We want to make sure they have their home occupancy permit. There's not anything in this code that mirrors that. So that's why there seems to be a little bit of concern. There might be a revision in the state code, even though it's just coming into play. So there's a little bit of discrepancy. So that's maybe one item you may want to speak with your city attorney about as far as that interpretation. If the county board of supervisors adopts an ordinance to direct the environmental health department to start permitting these, the city cannot say we don't want them. So that's an important provision of the code. There are some safety provisions in this code. It's not a license to open up your home as a full-blown restaurant. It's limited to either 30 meals a day or 60 meals a week. There's a maximum $50,000 cap on annual sales. There can only be one employee besides the family members, and the food must be prepared, cooked, and served the same day. So at least that cuts down some of the higher risk. A lot of when we do restaurant inspections, a lot of the high risk activities are related to cooling and reheating and storing the food overnight and reserving it. So those are things that are not going to be allowed in these types of operations if they're allowed to happen in Riverside County. There is an environmental health permit that's required. There's an annual inspection that's required, and we will be obligated to respond to complaints if we receive any. Okay, so once again, I mentioned the ordinance requirement. There's a couple provisions here. Minimal structural requirements. So there's no plan check requirement like there is with a new restaurant. This is designed to be in a home kitchen, not to turn a home kitchen into a commercial restaurant. So the same types of refrigerators and stoves and everything that you have in your kitchens, that's what we're talking about. We will not be able to apply our restaurant grading and scoring inspection. We'll have to develop a brand new inspection report. The one good piece of information is that we will be able to require food safety training. We'll have to pass our test on having knowledge of food safety. We've reached out to our partners at the county and public health. Dr. Kaiser has a little bit of concern that this might create some increased calls of food-related foodborne illnesses. That remains to be seen, but that's one scenario that could task the health department staff, the epidemiology staff. And then I mentioned code enforcement earlier. There is potential if one of these home kitchens gets out of line, they could generate some calls possibly to your local code enforcement about nuisances, noise, parking, etc. They're not allowed to put signs out in the street, nothing like that. Their advertising is basically limited to internet and other means, but not a physical sign. And that pretty much concludes my presentation. I'll be happy to take any questions. And if you want to follow up with me, I would love to hear what your cities are planning to do about both of these issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? I've got a couple.
Absolutely.
So in cities where people will give away food in parks, does this give them protection against the permits that we require people to take out if they serve more than X number of people?
No, charitable feeding is a little bit different than what we're talking about here. There's a different set of rules on that. This is basically a push cart type operation. When we talk to people that want to do charitable feeding, whether it's out of a church or a nonprofit, we try to get them to prepare the foods in an approved kitchen somewhere and then just deliver or hand out those low-risk packaged foods that we talked about. We really frown upon trying to set up a soup kitchen out in a park. That just is, opens up a whole arena of potential problems with food safety. So that's the way we try to approach those issues.
Okay. Other questions? No? Sounds like this will be fun.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just the messenger.
Good report. Okay, now the next item is the role of CVAG's Technical Advisory Committee, and Tom provided us a good summary of the last meeting. You want to go through that very briefly?
Maybe briefly for the benefit of those that weren't in the last meeting or didn't have a chance to read the staff report. And some of this really started with your colleague from Rancho Mirage, who contacted me on Thursday or Friday and said he couldn't be here. And he expected you all to give him a hard time for not being here.
I heard he did.
And he's indicated he'd be supportive of whatever direction. For those, again, that haven't been here, a number of city managers expressed awkwardness at having to take a vote, perhaps midstream in the CVAG approval process, where you have one committee member voting one way, and perhaps the vote ending up in a different direction with the executive committee. And it led to general conversation about whether city managers should vote at all. In fact, as I think about it, we generally don't ask our other city staff committees to vote on anything. We generally do things by consensus. It's worked for many years here. And in the discussion last go around, there was a sense from this group that perhaps an informal way, meeting could occur. We were gonna check in with our legal counsel on how that could work. And the other suggestion was that if there was going to be a agenda review meeting, perhaps it would occur at the beginning of the CVAG policy committee cycle. And right now, you meet on the second or third Monday, and oftentimes that's after some meetings at CVAG and before others. And if we were to change that with the executive committee's approval, perhaps you'd have the first meeting of the month, let's say, long before the executive committee met later in the month. We did check in with legal counsel, and some simple suggestions, and that is just to remove references to the TAC and TAC members in our policies and procedures manual. And the primary reason to do so is you are actually members of the executive committee. And so if you all got together, even informally, you could trigger Brown Act type considerations. So what we have before you is something that our legal counsel feels solid about, and that is I would call a meeting once a month or seven times a year or whatever it is, probably on the first Monday of the month. We do it at a time that's convenient for all of you. Maybe it's 11 o'clock again, and we would have essentially an agenda review meeting. In some cases, we might do it at a different location, say the EOC. Any questions about the background on this?
Yeah, comments, concerns?
I think you did a good job. I think you're on the right track.
Yeah. Well, if you could maybe take one of your last votes.
Another way to take away my chairmanship.
I move to take away Mark's chairmanship.
Second.
I'll put something together, and it'll be essentially a recommendation from staff and the TAC to the executive committee for the end of this month. And I'll work with Joanna, of course, on when we implement that, whether that would start in January or sometime thereafter. But we'll see what your and our bosses think about the idea at the next meeting.
Great. It'll be really interesting if we have to have one more meeting and we have to change the chair to somebody else so that they can do away with their...
Yeah.
Okay, so then we'll figure out later what day we would meet.
And just to get it, since you all are here, we probably target, Mondays seem to be very good CVAC days because everybody else got things going on for the rest of the week. I presume we do something on a Monday at 11 o'clock, Joanna, is that
sure,
right?
Sure, yeah.
So just, before 11 would not work. So let's target again, Mondays at 11, it gives you an opportunity to do lunch or whatever else afterwards as well. And we'll know more after the next executive committee meeting.
Yeah. Everybody's good? Great. Okay, the third item is on the next page. Signal synchronization update. Eric, thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. It's been a little while since we talked about signal synchronization, and things are coming to a head very quickly, so I thought it would be a good time just to bring you up to speed. Obviously, the first thing we had done was our master plan. That was done last year. Very robust plan that lays out a lot of signal synchronization and things beyond that. We've been working on our participating agreement. That was done at the beginning of this year. All the cities, with one exception, decided to participate in the program. A lot of things were contained in that. So far, one of the keystones of this was our TISMA, our Transportation System Maintenance and Operation Committee, and that committee has been meeting diligently every 2 weeks or more, and it's had full participation from the Valley, so I think it's so far been a very big success. We've been working on our preliminary engineering, the key piece of which is what's called a technology assessment. It's something that the Federal Highway Department requires for an intelligent transportation systems project, such as this one, one that involves lots of technology. They want us to spend a lot of time on the front end of the project, making sure that the equipment that we select and the equipment that we ultimately employ is adequate and will be adequate for when the project begins. And this is what staff from all their cities have been attending and meeting and discussing. Everything from cameras to controllers, sensors on the hardware side, software that will help neighboring municipalities and the region cooperate and coordinate on an incident. Software that will help us look at the logistics and see origin and destination data, see traffic speed data. So all that hardware and software we've been reviewing. In some cases, we'll pick just one thing for the whole region. And in some cases, cities will have a choice. For example, cameras. There'll be two or three cameras, because all of you cities have legacy systems. And so we want to make sure that whatever we do allows for you to continue to operate your legacy system as we move forward. We did finish our environmental work in October. CEQA and NEPA, that's all done, it's completed, which has allowed us to move forward into the final engineering. We anticipate, and again, we've been working with people from your cities, we anticipate the first plans to be submitted to the individual jurisdictions in December, having 95% plans. Again, working with them as we get to there, but that'll be the first chance for your staffs to actually review the plans for your municipality. Hopefully they'll turn it around quickly, and we'll be able to take your comments and work into our final plans, which we would like to have done by March. March committees are dark, but we'd like to complete the plans by then so that we can put together a request for proposal, take it to the committees in April, and take it out for bid in May. And that would be beginning the construction in spring of 2019. When we talk about this is phase one. This is 111, Washington, and Ramon. Phase two, as you know, is 18 additional corridors, the next highest ranked 18 corridors, which we're calling phase two. Phase two is underway as well. It's underway in the environmental. It's underway in preliminary engineering. We think we'll have our environmental submitted, the preliminary environmental study submitted to Caltrans in December. The idea is to overlap the construction of these projects for a couple of reasons. One, so that from the public standpoint, this is a continuous project. We don't stop for 4 months or 5 months and then remobilize again. Also, we think there's going to be some significant economies by being able to add those 18 corridors worth of products and procurement into what could be a joint process. We also believe there's going to be a learning curve, both on the equipment we've selected and on the implementation of installing that equipment, that if we are able to have the project be one continuous project, we think that in phase two there will be significant economies. This project, so it will be underway in 2019. The first phase should be done more or less by the end of next year, with the phase two beginning in next year and probably completing in 2020. The second project is 18 corridors with the plans. That's going to be, you know, a very thick set of plans. But again, each one of the jurisdictions will review your piece. It's been looking very exciting. We've had a lot of input from our TISMO committee. TISMO has been looking at all the different types of equipment. In January, we're going to take that equipment list and we're going to present it to TTAS, the Directors of Public Works, and just look for a consensus from them that this makes sense. Of course, hopefully they've been coordinating along the way, but it'll be a chance for all the cities to look collectively at all the equipment and have a discussion. So that'll be at January's TTAS committee. In a nutshell, that's where the project is. As you know, phase one is completely funded. Phase two is partially funded. We will continue, we've applied for additional funding, and we will continue to apply for additional funding, hoping to leverage federal and state dollars into additional federal state dollars into phase two. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Questions? Yes.
I just want to continue to point out that the policy manual for TISMO is an important piece. I've heard now some rumblings out there. I think council members think there's going to be a document that helps guide how that committee works, how they make decisions. And the more decisions that we make on what parts you're going to buy and how you're going to put this plan together before you even have a policy of how that committee works, I think gets dangerous. And I think that I know that some of my staff are helping on that policy, but I think that that's one little thing that could trip us that doesn't need to trip us. Get a policy manual together for that committee. Once it's in place, then that'll be one thing we can check off. And I think to overlook it will be a mistake in the long run.
Absolutely. And a subcommittee of the TISMO is going to meet this month still to begin that discussion. It's a little bit of a chicken or the egg until we know kind of what our capabilities are, and I think we do now from the vendors that we've looked at, the vendors that we liked, to know what our capabilities are so that we know what the policy, not policies, but operations might look like. And I think we have enough now that we can start fleshing that out. And I know your staff is one of the groups that wants to participate on that committee, and they will start meeting this month. So it's absolutely part of the process.
Other questions? Thank you very much. Okay, information items. Anybody have anything on that list you'd like to bring up? Tom?
Nope.
Okay, legislative issues. We have a legislative update today.
Erin's not here, so she sent this memo that's in front of all the members. Should be.
Any member comments? Okay, announcements.
Just the upcoming meetings. That's it.
Yeah. But maybe there'll be any.
Maybe.
Well, you're a good chair.
Well, if we're getting ready to adjourn, I want to, just on behalf of the TAC, I want to present myself with this honorary gavel. Actually, it looks like it's already spoken for. So is that it?